Well, the one thing I wanted to find out first is what got you into writing? Is this something that you started at an early age, high school, college, or what?
Yeah, I mean, since I was old enough to sort of be conscious, I always wanted to do some kind of storytelling. I mean, I really got the comics bug really early. Like, my parents got me collected the Golden Age comics and the Steve and Ditko and Stan Lee, Spider-Man. I grew up in the early 70s and the mid-70s, so I got a lot of that. I tried drawing my own comics. Eagle Man was my title from when I was 11. And then until I was about 8, until I was about 10, I realized I couldn't draw, so I gave up fairly quickly.
That's of a dream at 10? That's like
Well, then I switched to prose writing. Then I decided I wanted to be a novelist. And then I did that through high school, and then I went to school for screenwriting. But while I was in screenwriting, I got buddies with the guys who were learning to be comic book artists. And I went to Syracuse, and they've got a pretty big illustration program. And so I was hanging out with those guys all the time, and I joined the comic club. It's very exciting.
Adam?
Yeah. And then just the immediacy with which these guys' drawings sort of brought my words to life, I was hooked. And then I pretty much decided to become a comics writer for that. In fact, my best friend in college, who I did a lot of comics with, is Steve Ellis, who was a valiant artist and I believe followed Quesada and Ninjak. Okay. I believe he drew Ninjak number 5 while he was my roommate.
Really?
Yep. Wow. And I think he did Shadow Man. He did a bunch of valiant books.
Now, currently, what motivates you? What inspires you? What do you draw inspiration from when you write? What?
Well, I mean, you know, as anyone who's read Archer and Armstrong knows, I mean, I do like get a lot of inspiration from the newspaper and what's going on and current events and what's going on in the real world. I mean, I kind of feel like too many superhero comics, there's a lot of navel gazing and a lot of sort of characters talking about the plot. And I just feel like if you're not engaging the real world in any significant way, you don't really deserve to leave mom's basement, you know. And then like superheroes would deserve all the, you know, the complaints that they get. So I do, I get inspired by that. I get inspired by old stuff a lot. I think the only television channels I watch are Turner Classic Movies and various sports networks like the MLB Network. But and then, you know, there are my peers that inspire me, and I just have a tendency to look at work and go, wow, that's awesome, I want to do more of that, and all that kind of stuff. So you kind of have to find inspiration from everywhere, because when you're doing this professionally, you need to be able to constantly regenerate that enthusiasm, you know what I mean?
Since it's a reboot, what did you think was important to keep about the characters, and what did you think was important to change?
You know, it's funny. The Valiant did encourage us to go different ways. I mean, my original first issue was largely a remake of the first issue of Archer and Armstrong. In that, Grant's trying to kill him, he goes to bed, and sort of all that stuff happened. But I was definitely encouraged to sort of take a different route. And I think that part of the reason we made a splash with the critics is we did go that different route. We did do something a little more contemporary, you know. We didn't do the old, the kind of hoary pulp Tibetan thing, which is this is a joke that Greg put, my co-writer, frequent collaborator Greg Pack and I have, is a common superhero trope is white guy gets Asian powers, you know, Snake Eyes, Iron Fist, Archer, and the original Concoction, and they all go to Asia and become unstoppable badasses, you know. So he's no longer white guy gets Asian powers, which is always very exciting. But, you know, I mean, it's still basically the same. Is that you've got Armstrong is still, you know, a drunk and a hedonist and an immortal, but I did feel very strongly I want to give a reason for him to be an immortal, and that's the boon, this MacGuffin that everybody's after in the series.
Yep.
Just because I didn't like, to me, I mean, it's one thing if you're the X-Men and you're mutants and stuff like that, but it's another, quite another thing to just sort of say, well, he was born that way, that's why he's immortal. I feel like we need more of an explanation. Yeah.
You're working with Clint Henry. You worked with him before.
Yep.
On Incredible Hercules.
Yep, with the aforementioned Mr. Puck.
Did you did you add anything or change anything in the script in any way, knowing that you would be working with him?
Well, I mean, there's a huge degree of comfort. I think Warren Simons reached out to Clayton well before I'd written the script. So I know he did. So I actually went in knowing that Clayton was the artist. So Clayton's just great. Clayton did anything. He does great comedy. He does great action. He's just kind of a superstar. And it's hard to say I tailor something for him because I know he can do anything. So.
There's a lot, obviously a lot of religious references, historical, cultural. Did you reference that stuff? Did you just know it? What was your approach to that?
Well, specifically I've always been a fan of conspiracy theories, so you're going to see a lot of that in the book, and I'm definitely kind of a walking encyclopedia of weird factoids and just bizarre stuff that's happened in history. So Archer Armstrong is basically about a pair of conspiracy busters.
Okay.
So you're going to see a lot of that.
Did you see that we were on the Weekly World News website? Did you see that?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, we got coverage on the Weekly World News.
Oh, yeah. With the 1%?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Wow, I can die happy then. I did not know that. That's cool. The most fun thing I found was that the quote that Reverend Archer gives about Armstrong in that scene where he's introduced, I can't remember how it goes, but it's the son of perdition has been revealed, the man who places himself above God, or however it goes, or places worship himself above God. That's in, and I cannot pronounce this, so if there are any biblical scholars here, please correct me. That's from
strike you down.
That's from Thessalonians 1, the book of the Bible I was not previously familiar with.
First or second?
First. And I thought that was fascinating because that's basically what Barry Windsor Smith was saying the sec felt about Armstrong in the very first iteration of Archer and Armstrong. So I don't know if Barry knew that or that's just a happy coincidence or what, but I was really kind of pleased by that. So that's the name of the whole arc is basically called Sons of Perdition after that Bible quote that I literally just was Googling stuff about the Antichrist Reverend Archer could say that was some pithy, and then I stumbled across that and I was like,
go to Thessalonians for pithy.
I'm going with that one.
It's in the Bible. Armstrong's in the Bible.
Why do they want to kill him?
It's in the Bible.
Right. And you're done. Right there. It's
right.
All done. You're
it's
good.
It's in the Bible.
It's in the Bible.
So that I did not know. That's one specific thing I learned during the issue. That was interesting.
Did you do a lot of internet searching, referencing, stuff like that then?
Yep. I used the Google.
The Google.
Used the Google. I just did one issue that's like half embedded web links to various things in ancient China.
getting some Asian powers? Is that thing come back?
No. In fact, that's
ancient Asian.
That's
powers?
A specific reference to another Valiant series.
Harbinger?
No, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it on the web.
Okay, last final question. How often do you go to Hogs and Heifers?
I have been to Hogs and Heifers exactly once.
Really?
And it was Fleet Week.
Oh, my God.
So it was full of sailors. Full of sailors. It was very interesting. And for those of you who don't know, Hogs and Heifers is the actual bar in Meatpacking District that the cunningly named and subtly named Sows and Cows from the first issue. I love the logo that Clayton came up with them. He put Sows and Cows in the sign, but I think the ink or the color took it out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So now it's just only now those of us listening to this podcast will know that the actual name of the bar is Sows and Cows.
Okay.
As opposed to Hogs and Heifers. So don't sue us Hogs and Heifers, it's a different place. Where they staple bras to the
it happens a lot. Actually, for those people who've not been to New York, it's hard to go into a bar where they're not bras.
Really?
Hold on the wall. Everywhere you go.
Maybe you're drinking with you.
No kidding.
I didn't know about that.
So worth checking out. Is it a touristy place or is it like a local?
It's super tiny, so I did not like it.
Okay.
I didn't like it, so that's why I had my character crash it. Well, it was one of those really trendy, like pseudo-celebrity bars like Julia Roberts would go, and that's why I want to be being super trendy. I should take it back. There's nothing wrong with how it's happening. It's just a little small, crowded, and loud for me.
Yeah, cool. Thank you very much for coming on.